Hey, you're listening to What the Riff? A podcast that takes you back to riff and reminisce about the days of old. Yep, that old time rock and roll. We're going to share a few songs off an album of the week from the 60s, 70s, 80s, or 90s, with some individual staff picks and a little more. You're going to hear some well-known favorites, along with a few deeper cuts that'll have you shuffling through your old albums. Maybe you're that person who blurts out an old lyric or riff in the middle of an everyday conversation. Or maybe these songs are new to you, and you'll add them to your playlist. In any case, we hope you enjoy the riffs and our riffing about them on What the Riff? Brought to you by Pella Windows and Doors. What the Riff?
Welcome to June of 1977. Elvis has performed his last performance. The Starship Enterprise on the space shuttle flies for the first time on the back of a Boeing 747, and the Portland Trail Blazers are the NBA champs. I'm Wayne.
I'm Rob.
I'm Brian.
I'm Bruce.
And today we're spotlighting an album from 1977. Rob, what you got?
I have today iRobot, which is from the Alan Parsons Project. It was the second album that they had released. And I think people are pretty familiar with a lot of their later stuff. If you remember, they had Eye in the Sky and Games People Play. Those were probably more well-known. And if you're a fan of symphonic sound, which is, you know, moving from headphone to headphone, then I think you're going to like this. We're doing four tracks from this album, and I'm going to start at the back. What you're listening to right now is Genesis chapter 1, verse 32. And so I'm kind of starting at the end. But I like the way that this sounds. It makes me think of a movie track. So when I listen to Alan Parsons, at least their older stuff like this, I start to think, you know, that'd be a great scene in a movie.
Mm-hmm.
The guy walking out of town, riding out of town on a horse. He's done his job, you know. It could work with a Western. It could work with a guy driving out in his 77 Camaro, right?
Yeah.
But
off into the sunset.
Yeah, yeah. So one of the things I thought was interesting about this was the title is Genesis chapter 1, verse 32.
Right.
So
a biblical reference?
Yes, it is. But what's interesting is the first chapter of Genesis only has 31 verses. Oh. And so this is verse 32, which is about the machines, which is the whole point of this album, iRobot. So you hear the cover says, iRobot, the story of the rise of the machine and the decline of man, which paradoxically coincided with his discovery of the wheel and a warning that his brief dominance of this planet will probably end because man tried to create robot in his own image.
Interesting. And I, for one, look forward to our robot overlords.
Now, that's an Isaac Asimov reference, too, isn't it, Rob?
Yes, it is. And so, yeah, he was the, he inspired Parsons' co-creator and the writer for Alan Parsons was a guy named Eric Wolfson. And he was inspired by Isaac Asimov's science fiction writing, and he wrote iRobot in 1950. Okay. So it was, you know, this is an album from 1977, and it goes even further back to where the story iRobot was written. And
well, there are multiple stories in iRobot, so, but there was an overall theme of machines and robots in this, so hence the same thing going on with what's the
yeah.
title of the album.
Yeah.
So it is the next chapter.
That's right. That's right. So yeah, chapter 1, verse 32. So you know, so you go from here. The next piece that's on here is a track called Eclipse. And you know, you talk about the epic movie soundtrack. This one's really cool, and it's kind of got a little bit of a spooky sound. You've got some voices in the background. It's kind of like that space. I mean that 2001, mm-hmm. a Space Odyssey.
Space Odyssey, yep.
Kind of hear the people in the background.
Sounds like all the people this past summer watching the eclipse.
Exactly. Yeah, so you have this kind of ethereal sound where you've got the clouds coming over and everybody's going, uh-oh, the gods must be angry.
Yep.
Now, a lot of people are kind of obviously are familiar with Alan Parsons Project, but Alan Parsons was involved in a lot of other things beforehand.
Yeah, he definitely was. He did quite a few pieces that he was involved in. As a matter of fact, this album was mixed at Abbey Road Studios, and that's where Parsons kind of got his start. He engineered the Beatles' Abbey Road album and also Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon.
I think we're
going to be featuring that album at some point. And so I think that's kind of cool with all the references when you start looking back at what different people have done. And Alan Parsons was involved in a lot of stuff, definitely.
Now, I saw him in concert probably about 25 years ago, and I have to say most of the people that were playing with him were session musicians.
Right.
And that one thing made it very tight, and it almost specifically was directly off the album. There were some drum solos, things of that sort, but in turn, it was a wonderful concert. It was probably one of my favorite concerts, and the venue was in a crappy Civic Auditorium, but I want to say it was a thrill to see it.
Sometimes I wonder if the session musicians, I mean, they're more in tune maybe with the sound, the way the quality of the sound is, it's kind of like they're paying more attention to it or something ways.
And I'll tell you, it seems like when you get into concerts, there are kind of two big categories. You've got those that are more like the session musicians that are going to do things like it is on the album, so it's very much like you've heard it before. And then there are others that are more jam musicians. So, you think of the extreme,
right.
The Grateful Dead would be that jam musician. You never know no concert's going to be the same.
Right. They kind of go off and do their own thing.
Well, you never see Alan Parsons. I don't remember a concert since the 70s.
I have no idea what he looks like.
So that was the one time from, this was in the 90s when it happened.
Well, we're going to go on to this next one. We're going to listen to some words. Those first two didn't have any words. This one does. This is one that you would probably know. It's better known, and it's called I Wouldn't Want to Be Like You.
This was almost sort of a hit for him, if there was one on this album. There were several other songs on here that I like. Obviously, we've got one coming up that's my favorite off this album.
Yeah, this was one that actually has made it to a couple of other places. It's on Grand Theft Auto 5. I don't know how many Grand Theft Autos there are right now, but this is on there.
I didn't know there were more than one.
Yeah, and then there's a TV series called Mindhunter.
That's because you're an old fart, Brian.
That's true.
And what does the beginning of this remind you of?
Eye in the Sky.
Eye of the Tiger.
Oh, Eye of the Tiger. Right.
I was thinking about Eye of the Tiger.
Eye of the Tiger is what I meant to say.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. And I guess Eye of the Tiger would have been inspired by this instead of
true.
The other way around.
There you go.
About 6 year difference.
Yeah.
Well, and two, Edge of 17.
Yeah.
Good one.
All that has that.
Good one.
That. And we've got that. The drums have that disco backbeat. Yeah. You can tell this is a 70s.
Are you insinuating that they use that in discos?
Yeah, good point.
Well, I guess if Kiss can cross the line, Alan Parsons can too.
Actually, believe it or not, Kiss released an album during this time on June of 77. It was Love Gun.
Yeah.
And Jay Giles' band had an album, Monkey Island. Crosby, Stills, and Nash had CSN. Dark Star was the big song on that. James Taylor had JT, and AC/DC had Let There Be Rock.
Oh yeah,
all disco, I'm sure.
Yeah. And Kiss also put out their comic book that was made with what?
Blood from the band.
I don't think Alan Parsons ever did that.
No.
Another musical thing that was happening: the Sex Pistols played it on a boat outside the Queen's 50th year jubilee. And they were soundly escorted away.
So they didn't hold back on the lyrics, huh?
You're saying that the Queen was not appreciative of Sex Pistols? at the Jubilee?
Not her Jubilee, I'm sure. Any other time, she probably had it cranked up on her phonograph.
Well, when they call her Ain't No Human Being.
Disgraceful.
Now, top hits of 77 of June. Sir Duke by Stevie Wonder.
Sir Duke.
I'm Your Boogeyman by Casey and the Sunshine Band. And I want to say, Casey put out some good danceable music. He came recently to an area near us, and it sold out within minutes.
Loved his jumpsuits, too. Loved the jumpsuits with the huge bell-bottoms. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I want to check out the end of this, the way, and this goes to a lot of the ways that he kind of ends abruptly.
Kind of a staple, huh?
Nice.
Now, this is my favorite song off this album, probably one of my favorite songs from Alan Parsons, and this is one of those ones where I crank it to 11 and just let it blow.
Yeah, this is good.
Yeah.
I did not know this was Alan Parsons' project.
I did not either.
Who did you think it was?
I had no idea. I hadn't really thought about it. But
this could go on the
different.
Buckingham Nicks album.
I thought this was I thought this was Lindsey Buckingham.
Yep. I can see that. Do you know who the lead singer is on this song?
He had quite a few, and I want to say
it wasn't Lindsey.
No, it's not Lindsey. I know
they're too busy.
No, it wasn't him
doing the top album of the year.
Yeah,
that
he was too busy with
that was rumors.
The Mac Attack.
Yeah, and Alan Parsons. I mean, he wasn't lead vocals.
No,
that's the funny thing.
I'm just wondering who this is because it does, as you said earlier, it sounds remarkably like Lindsey Buckingham.
Yeah, this is this guy. I mean, I like that little bass riff that he has, and just it is high quality sound.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, a producer. I guess that's what you expect.
Well, this is about a decade in from the progressive rock era. You had the Nice kind of started off Keith Emerson's first group, and now this kind of he obviously started Emerson, Lake and Palmer, and it just exploded. Genesis, early Genesis was this. There was a lot of progressive groups,
this Rush had already put out 2112 by now. Mm-hmm. I think Farewell to Kings might have been in 77.
Right.
Yeah. The thing with Alan Parsons and this, if you have this album, it's got this. You know, what I thought was so cool, the album artwork has got this robot on the front of it, but it's all drawn, cartoon illustrated. Mm-hmm. So it looks cool, but it's a mix of mixing that illustration with the photograph of them, and they're in some mall, you know, going on these up and down these escalators with in these tubes. So it kind of looks science fiction.
To think on that, actually, Queen had News of the World, and they had the robot that was like reaching into the, I guess, cavity and pulling out the band members.
That's right.
They were bleeding off the hands of the robot.
And let's not forget Styx with Mr. Roboto.
Well, that was several years
Except
later.
That was about, yeah.
But that's when they jumped the shark there.
That's when they told Dennis DeYoung to take a hike.
Yeah, the robots, I mean, it's kind of funny to think that, you know, you got pictures of robots like that from 77, and the robots fit in the palm of our hand now, and they do whatever, you know.
Yeah, nanobots.
Yeah, they're tracking us all over the place. And still waiting for the flying car. I don't know about you guys.
Well, they can't even get the one on the ground to work right. Remember, they had some fatalities with the self-driving car. Was there in Europe somewhere?
Yeah, the self-drivers. Yeah. That makes me nervous.
Well, my daughter's a pilot, so once we get a self-driving car, we're all heading to Florida, buddy.
There you go. That'll be good.
Well, maybe in our lifetime we'll see that.
Well, there's several in production. There's a couple that's supposed to come out in the next 2 years, but they're $500,000 or more.
Mm-hmm. What's interesting, you know, we're sitting here and we're talking about science fiction. That's the wrap on iRobot, but, you can't really talk about science fiction in the 70s. And kind of what's the future going to look like? What's going to be going on?
Of course, now we're fading into the top movies of June of 1977, and Memorial Day came out with Star Wars, and That was the ultimate. I don't know. I probably watched it about three times when I was a kid then.
Well, I remember trying to buy tickets for it. I lived, of course, at the time in a little town in southwest Louisiana, and there was only one theater in town, and both, it was two cinemas, and both of them were showing Star Wars, and the line would wrap around almost a block.
Oh, yeah.
There's no way you could get in there.
Yeah.
And so we didn't, I the first time I actually watched this movie was when it came out on VHS. I'll be honest. So what was that, 81, 82?
Really?
Yeah.
I just, wow.
It just wasn't a priority, but
the first Star Wars trilogy kind of brackets my childhood, because I remember going to Star Wars with my parents. Mm-hmm. The first movie that went to Star Wars with my parents, and I drove myself to Return of the Jedi. Mm-hmm. So that kind of brackets that childhood experience.
You see, I remember having to watch the first one. Well, now the fourth one in the trilogy, whatever the series is, and then. Before I went to see The Empire Strikes Back in the theater, I had to watch that first.
My family actually bought a Super 8 of this that
really?
Had no sound, and we were able to watch it. And it was pretty wild.
Did you put your own sound in it?
I wish they still had it somewhere, but I assume it's been trashed. But it was really cool
to have your own. They didn't have...
Well, it probably had sound, but we didn't have sound on our projector.
I gotcha. And you can't lip read a bunch of robots and people with face masks on. So if you don't even know what they're saying.
But you're talking about
imagination could really make some.
It was
colorful.
Edited down to all the action sequences. So for a kid, you just love the hell of it. Just nothing but.
We're talking about the album cover for Alan Parsons looking old, outdated. It's funny if you see any of the original Star Wars footage. You thought it was so cool when it came out, and now, I mean, they've digitally remastered it and everything, so it looks really good now, but if you look back at the original, it wasn't that exciting.
Well, other movies that came out that same in June, because summer was the time to go see movies then, was Smoking the Bandit. Yeah. Obviously, that was a big Southern hit with the...
And the Trans Am sales went through the roof.
I knew several people that had them. A Bridge Too Far... that was a World War II epic. And then The Deep with Robert Shaw, Jacqueline Bisset, and Nick Nolte. And
who had Jacqueline Bisset's picture on your wall?
Oh, yeah. Well, among others.
And Farrah.
And quite a few.
Really?
And then the crappy movie of the month was Roller Coaster. It was a horror film at an amusement park.
Oh, I thought it was by the Ohio Players.
That's love Roller Coaster.
I love the John Williams scores. They are, you know, the symphonic quality of this is excellent.
Yeah, you can't really talk about 1977 without Star Wars, that's for sure.
Mm-mm. All right, I think this is my pick.
Yeah, we're up to staff picks now. And Bruce, this is yours. What you got?
Just listen to those guitars coming in. All right, this should be a fairly familiar song.
It is indeed.
This is...
definitely one to crank up in the radio when you're in the car.
This is Salisbury Hill, Peter Gabriel. Listen to these first few lyrics, too.
Climbing up on Salisbury Hill, I could see the city light.
So, Peter Gabriel, this is off of his first album. First solo album. That's correct. Yeah. So he had, at this point, he had left Genesis. This is off of his first album. His first four albums are untitled. So people will refer to this album as Peter Gabriel 1, or they may refer to it as the Car album, because that's what the album cover looked like.
Wow.
But his first four albums, he didn't make it easy to identify. But he had left Genesis, and this song is kind of about his letting go of Genesis. So the lyrics, they're fantastic lyrics all the way through, but it never sounds like he has an axe to grind. You know, that's the nice thing about it. It's more of a letting go, but it still feels kind of positive.
Yeah, maybe a little, wistful, or kind of just like thinking about what it could have been.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah. It's about freedom, and some of the things you can hear, some of the lyrics where he says, you know, they think I was a nut, you know, that kind of thing. The idea of why are you leaving Genesis? You know, you've got everything that you want here, but it was a kind of a creative direction thing.
Well, Genesis obviously from since then kind of really went to the pop direction, and Peter really kind of struck a chord. He had, you know, Biko and things like that. He kind of really got politically active, and you can't really do that and try to keep a lot of your fans. Once you do that, you kind of piss a bunch of them off, and that's happening now in quite a few groups.
I mean, I think Genesis was good, but I think after he left, I think they had better success.
They were more successful. Both Peter Gabriel and Genesis were more successful after he left. There are several things about this song, though, that are just different. One is it's written in 7/4 time. So you don't find too many songs. I would say it's the best rock song in 7 that I know, which basically means I like it better than Pink Floyd's Money.
Because that's it. There's only two of them.
There are a few, but those are the only really
popular songs. Those
two songs
really hard to choose from, though. You're right. You can't lose with either one.
And it's kind of interesting because there's most songs you'll have verse chorus. In this one, the chorus, such as it is this right here. My heart going boom boom boom. That repeats, but there's really not a verse chorus bridge verse chorus like you've got with a lot of songs.
Well, getting back to your point about 7/8 time, this thing stays in 7/8. They never goes back to 4/4.
No, you're right.
Like Money does. Money right. At the beginning it's 7/8, then it goes to 4/4 on the when Rock City kicks in, you know, with the guitar solo all the way through. Then it goes back, I guess, to 7/8 time toward the end. But this one stays the 7/8 the whole time.
That's right. And the lyrics, the last lyrics, I love those. Today I don't need a replacement. I'll tell them what the smile on my face meant. My heart going boom, boom, boom. Hey, I said, you can keep my things. They've come to take me home. That's just a fantastic
That's well
lyric.
Written, yeah.
I like that.
Great pick, Bruce.
Yeah, that's good. I'm going to play that more.
Turn on your radio. I promise you'll
Heavy
hear
Heavy rotation.
Put it on I can't.
Our Spotify account. We'll have it on there.
They may get mad at us.
Well, June of 77 will be a Spotify account, and you'll be able to go and listen to all these.
That's right.
All right. We got another staff pick. Brian, this one's yours. What
Thank
you got?
Thank you. Let's talk about somebody else you can't talk about in either 76 and into 77. That's Mr. Peter Frampton. Coming off of his 1976 huge blockbuster live album. The next album that came out was his I'm In You album. Everybody knows his number one hit, I'm In You. It was went to the top of the Billboard charts.
Oh, yeah.
But this is a song called Rocky's Hot Club. And no, this is not about the movie Rocky. Of course, that was also a very popular movie at the time. This is about his dog. He was just strumming a guitar one day. His dog's laying in his lap. He starts strumming the guitar and comes up with these lyrics. And you can also hear the harmonica in there. You'll hear not only Peter Frampton playing the harmonica, but also a guest by the name of Stevie Wonder.
Oh, yeah.
So Stevie's in there playing the harmonica with him.
That's cool.
Yeah. So, basically just talking about Rocky's Hot Club. They're just going to spend some time relaxing, which Peter Frampton, to this day, still does not do very much of. He's a true performer. He says he can stay home for a little while, maybe 4 weeks, maybe that much, but he's itching to get back on stage. He just really enjoys entertaining crowds and sharing his gift. So there, right now, the song right there, you can hear some Stevie Wonder.
Now, I saw an interview with Peter Frampton. He was kind of upset at himself putting out this album as quickly as he did after.
Again, rather, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I can understand he had such success with Frampton Comes Alive, and it was such a great album. But he got caught up in the limelight, and they said, hey, let's put something out. And it was a big seller.
So you're saying he was living in the limelight.
Exactly.
<Okay. laughs> The universal dream.
No, but this is to your point, Wayne. I think in that interview, I recall what he told Dan Rather, because Dan Rather, I love his interviews with the rock artist, and he says, what went wrong? You know, you went off this huge, successful album down, and you kind of faded away. And to your point, he said, we just rushed. He said, we didn't, it was poor planning. And so they were just, he was so focused on, he and the record companies were so focused on getting something else out there that they just really didn't take the time.
The other thing,
necessary.
Previously, he had always been, he started out with The Herd, 16-year-old guitarist playing with this group, and then, you know, he continues on, and just throughout his entire career, he has nothing but hit after hit after hit with the groups he was with. And then when he came out as just Peter Frampton, then it was just him. And suddenly he didn't have other people to kind of, you know, riff off of, try to get a further along on his songs. And Frampton Comes Alive was a greatest hits album. No one really kind of listened to those previous albums, so when that came out, everybody went, hey man, that's great music. Well, it was the best of four albums. Now here, let's put out another best of, you know, you got 6 months to put something out.
Right.
Sounds like the Electric Company.
Wayne, what's on? Is this yours, Wayne, from Sanford Townsend Band?
Yeah, this is "Smoke from a Distant Fire" by Sanford Townsend. Really, their only hit. It did reach high as number 9 on the Billboard charts. They were initially songwriters for Loggins and Messina, and some of the members of the band from Loggins and Messina played on this album.
This is not Billy Vera and the Beaters. It sounds just like them, didn't it?
This is another one that I had no idea that it was Sanford Townsend Band. I was thinking that it was Van Morrison.
Oh
yeah, I think I did
Good
too.
Call. Go ahead, Wade.
That's all right. The interesting thing about this is that one was an Auburn grad and the other was an Alabama grad. So
they got along.
They moved to California together.
With an aching in their heart.
The Auburn grad, Ed Sanford, had wrote this song about 10 years before. About a breakup he had with a girl, and
imagine that.
And they were recording at Muscle Shoals in Alabama, and
Muscle Shoals.
You know they have the Swamp Bugs.
They've been
a lot of people played there. You had the Rolling Stones, obviously Lynyrd Skynyrd and Bob Seger. What I like is this has a very R&B feel.
Yeah.
I mean that sax right now is just.
See, I love the sax. Yeah.
Anytime you have a horn section on an album, I'm in.
Yeah,
I love that that lyric that your eyes have the mist of the smoke of a distant fire.
Yeah,
that's just a cool lyric.
Yeah.
The one lyric I like on this is, you know, and pack up and I don't care, just don't let the screen door hit you on the way out. That's such a Southern song because not many people have screen doors, but, you know, back then in the 70s, you had a whole house fan and you had the door open, you had a screen door, and that's what you turned on and how to try to keep cold back in the 60s and 70s.
But I find it interesting to your point, Bruce, about this, your eyes have the mist of a smoke from a distant fire. What about the girl with faraway eyes? Is that kind of the same thing? Kind of
absolutely.
All these references to eyes. And
totally things. Different from Betty Davis' eyes, though.
That's right.
So this is a one-hit wonder. Are you a fan of one-hit wonders, Wayne?
One-hit wonders, two-hit wonders. I don't care. As long as
one
it's great
wonder
music.
One-hit wonder,
Wayne. I'm going to try to come up with more obscure songs for you guys. How's that?
That's awesome.
I think it's great.
They won't even be hits. They'll just be great songs.
Well, look at Tommy Tutone, who hit it huge with Jenny. What is he doing now? He teaches computer science somewhere.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting because in these instances, you think it's somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You don't even know who it is that's saying it. You kind of assume it's somebody well-known.
Right.
It's interesting, though, that you're mentioning the Loggins and Messina connection. You can feel that a little bit. It's got kind of a similar harmonic structure. I like it. It's neat.
Good pick.
Yep.
Now we're starting to roll down to the last one that we have a staff pick, and that's going to be Rob. And we're going to end it with this lyric.
All right. So my pick here is a song by the Electric Light Orchestra. It's called Telephone Line. Very high tech.
I don't think anybody nowadays knows how to use a telephone that was used in the 70s.
You remember that sound?
It's kind of interesting how they do this lyric.
Yeah.
They really were technologically advanced.
Speaking of good producers, Jeff Lynne is incredible.
I love that transfer from the over the phone
to
the live.
Isn't it?
Once again, another one of those symphonic type songs. Now, anybody else have seen ELO in concert besides me?
I've only seen video. I've never sat live with them.
I actually saw them during this. This was my first concert, and I went to it during '77.
With or without the spaceship?
And it was with the spaceship.
Okay.
The entire orchestra was inside the spaceship, and it rose up, and they had a little flip top, and there they were, and it was shooting out laser beams.
You sure that wasn't Parliament and
Funkadelic? That was the Electric Light. it was really cool. I have to say, I had the best seats in the house. I was like upper section, last row, and the whole thing. It's like watching the Pink Floyd. You need to be in the first row or you need to be in the back row because everything else in between is going over your head. And so everything was in front of you. This was back when people actually wanted to do a show. This was not just...
Putting on a show, entertaining you in multiple ways.
Exactly.
Imagine that.
You know who else? I think Boston was similar in terms of using technology in their songs.
Yeah,
I saw them shortly after this, actually.
So when did you see them? In 77?
77, yeah.
All right, so that was Boston's first album then.
Yeah, actually it was Boston's second album is when I went to go see them. I guess it was in 80.
It was after Don't Look Back then.
Yeah, and it was a great, another great, great.
Right.
Concert to go see.
The amazing thing up there, when you look at them on stage, you have Tom Schultz, and then you also had the lead singer. Brad Delp, thank you. Both of them are 6'5", 6'6". Mm-hmm. So you're looking at two trees on stage. So, yeah, what a group. Okay. Mm.
Yeah, I like, they had quite a few hits, and then talking about the Electric Light Orchestra, and when this album came out, a friend of mine bought one of those boxes. It was about the size of a speaker, and it had these colored lights inside it, and they would go.
Yeah, I remember
they
those.
Would blink to the music, and it had like one of those, you know what you cover the fluorescent lights with, those panels?
Mm-hmm.
So it would diffuse the light a little bit. So I remember listening to ELO and just sitting in his room watching these lights flash off and on. And just talking, hanging out, but that was, it was like, oh, this is so cool.
Excellent.
I couldn't afford one of those, but I'd go look at his. It was really cool.
I tell you, Rob, this is a very good pick. I when I was growing up, Electric Light Orchestra was my first favorite group as I was kind of coming into, you know, rock music. And
Did you have an album or 45?
Well,
or?
You know, they came, I had the greatest hits. This was just before Discovery came out, which was more of a kind of a disco-oriented thing. But I really liked Electric Light Orchestra. As I was coming into rock music, but just before I discovered Rush.
Let's not forget about that foursome band from Pasadena, California. I think they go by the name of Van Halen, I think is what it was.
Yeah, that would be.
Never heard of them.
No, I never have either, but I just remember they were from the 77 era.
Yeah, well, I hope if you're listening, you'll check this one out. And
I mean, they had tons
this.
Of hits. I mean, there was a greatest hits album for a reason because almost
cool
every
song.
Single one of them were hits. This was among them. And then they continued on, obviously, with the Traveling Wilburys. We're about ready to end it up, and so we're going to end it up with kind of a novelty song. And anybody want to lead this one in?
I think it can lead itself in almost. Yeah. Just listen to these lyrics. Could get away with them today.
No. But of course, the era was disco, and so we certainly have to pay our respects to the disco era with this an unpolitically correct song from Joe Tex. Where's my polyester rivers? I'm sorry. I
need did a dip. Really? Almost broke my hip.
I always thought that Kanye West can use this as his breakup song whenever he decides to get a divorce.
Uh-oh. And what would you say? Words to live by, gentlemen.
That's after a long night on the disco floor.
Well, you know what Mickey Gilley would say. The girls all get prettier at closing time.
Oh, yeah. They should have put this on Shallow Hal.
Well, speaking of the wind section, some wonderful wind section here.
Well, I mean, the soul music during this time was just excellent. You know, there was 10 years of great, great, you know, like mm-hmm. I said, a horn section. When you got a horn section, it adds so much
absolutely.
To it.
Absolutely. Well, look at Casey and the Sunshine Band with songs you mentioned earlier. Incredible wind sections. So
I think you see something, too, Brian, with the music that you'll start with the genre and it's very good, and then kind of the commercial aspect mm-hmm. jumps into it. So you know you get disco. I think the disco music from the early to mid 70s tends to be you know pretty good, and then as you start drifting into the late 70s, that's when a lot of the commercial aspects of it hit. Kind of like hair bands in the 80s. You know, you had some really good ones in the early 80s.
And yeah,
some commercial. Take over in the late 80s.
Well, that's you can still hear the disco backing on this, the hi-hat and everything going mm-hmm. on, but you know that just became the whole total focus of the disco sound. And really in 77 sort of when it you know, jumped the shark and people really rebelled against it.
Wasn't Saturday Night Fever released in September?
That's what I was trying to remember.
Of 77?
I never
by
saw
a young
it,
actor,
so I don't
a 22-year-old actor. From
I'm
the,
keeping my man card.
22-year-old actor by the name of John Travolta, I think is his name.
Yeah, who's that?
I don't know.
Was that a one-hit wonder?
I think so. He'll always be Barbarino yeah. to me.
No, I mean, he exploded. That movie just, well, he had already had a huge following with, like you said, Welcome Back, Kotter, but jumping out in that movie just propelled him into superstar.
Oh, yeah.
I followed it up with Grease. And then with Urban Cowboy, I mean, those three blockbusters, my goodness.
It's interesting. He started it all off with the musical.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess Saturday Night Fever wasn't necessarily a musical, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
It's like,
it was one big music video.
Yeah. Yeah, that's for sure.
I watched it the other day, to be honest with you guys. I couldn't stop laughing. I just thought, man, this is just cheese at its best.
All I remember is seeing the intro of him walking down the street with a paint can.
I know it.
There are some.
And then how are those flashing neons, you know, Saturday Night Fever, Travolta, excuse me.
There are some movies that are timeless, and there are others that are definitely stuck in the age that they were written.
Yep.
So where are you putting that one, Bruce?
I think we'll leave that one safely in
stuck in the middle with you.
Exactly. I was about to say the same thing, Wayne. I think we hang around each other too much. We think the same way now.
All right. Well, this is a good classic here. Don't Want to Bump No More, No Big Fat Woman. You want to take us out here, Wayne?
Sure. Well, we've got a Facebook page. If you guys would like to like it on there, we'll be able to post a lot of these videos if they'll show up. I don't know. Join us on Twitter. We'll also have a playlist on Spotify for you. Go to our webpage. Check out the links on iTunes and also on Amazon. Go through. Purchase or sign up through them, and obviously they'll kick us back some love. Every little bit helps, and if you have a suggestion to spotlight us, go to our for a group or an album or a song to spotlight, contact us. We're at we've got our webpage, just you know,
whattheriff.com.
Yeah, and just you know, scroll on there. There's a contact spot. Hit contact. Send us what you like. We'll we're do our best. Just to let you know, this podcast was brought to you by Pella Windows. Check out Pella's new styles of hardware, new colors, and new larger sizes. Be it new construction or replacement, Pella is viewed to be the best. And hopefully we'll see you soon. Until the Notes podcast, I'm Wayne.
I'm Rob.
I'm Brian.
And I'm Bruce.
You're listening to What the Riff. See you next time.
You've been listening to What the Riff? We hope you enjoyed riffing with us, and we invite you to visit whattheriff.com to find and download the music we had on tap today. You can also contact us and request an album that you'd like us to riff about at whattheriff.com. And if you get a minute, like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter and YouTube. Thanks for listening to What the Riff? Brought to you by Pella Windows and Doors. Also, Marbury Creative Group. Tell it better. If necessary, use words.